Construction meets the world's most popular board game in new Monopoly Construction Edition. Amass or possibly lose great fortunes. Every space on the board is packed with both iconic construction brands and incredible infrastructure projects in this new exciting edition of Monopoly. You'll need to make smart decisions to come out on top. Have you got what it takes to succeed in the world of construction? Search Construction Monopoly to order now.
Welcome once more to Reconstruction, the Construction Index podcast, brought to you every week by me, David Taylor, editor of the Construction Index magazine, and Phil Bishop, who edits our daily online news service. It's Wednesday, the 5th of August, and I hope you've got plenty of lively material for us to discuss, Phil.
Morning, David. Well, I hope so. There's always stuff going on.
And it's at the deep end there.
it's nice to be back on our weekly schedule.
It is indeed.
Having been fortnightly for a few weeks, this is our 23rd podcast, I think, that we've done, having started earlier on this year. So we're starting to get into the swing of it a bit, I think.
Yeah, we might get the hang of it soon.
Here's hoping.
So what's been happening? There's been a couple of interesting things happening in the last week.
Well, if I may, could I just do a couple of postscripts to things we talked about last week?
Yes, of course.
Because I'm very aware that when we were talking about Brexit, we might have sounded like we didn't know that we'd already left, that Britain had already left the European Union. Of course, the divorce has happened. The decree absolute came through in January 2020. And what we were talking about last week was the negotiations of the terms of the settlement. Yes, who gets the house? It seems like no one's getting the house. We all lose. So it's clearly the transition period we're talking about and what happens after that. Yeah. In the same vein, I discovered shortly after our conversation last week a useful document that anyone who is concerned about importing building materials next year. I mean, of course, I suspect most of our listeners won't import. They'll still go down to their local builder's merchant or their local suppliers, and it'll be their suppliers who will be doing the importing.
Yes, exactly.
But if you go to gov.uk, there's a page, prepare to import to Great Britain from January 2021. And that is a useful guide.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to pick up on, we talked about last week, we were talking about standards and three-pin plugs and lifting capacities of cranes and things. And of course, the famous success story of standardisation, which literally changed the world, is the ISO container, the 20-foot and 40-foot container.
Oh, of course.
So yeah. I think we should have at least given credit in any conversation about standardisation. You have to recognise what the 20-foot box did to world trade, changing the way goods
absolutely.
Are moved
yeah,
around.
God.
Absolute revolution. Conceivably.
Who invented it? Do you know?
Do you know? I don't. And I don't know if someone invented it or whether it's just a committee of people.
It just has sort of evolved.
Yeah, but it's I haven't done any homework on containers since then.
No.
I would make the case, or it could One could make the case that the ISO container has as big an impact on world trade as the internet. There's a talking point, but not for today.
Yes. Okay, fine. Well, we'll mull that one over, maybe come back to it.
Well, the other big standard story, which I also didn't know, someone said to me is, do you know what the most interesting story of international standardisation is? They said the Visa card. The fact that your Visa card is the same size everywhere in the world, the same sort of slot that you put it into, and it's recognised all over the world. And I'd never thought about that, and I haven't read up on that. But apparently that's also a fascinating story, the history of the Visa card.
Ah.
Anyway, that was last week's conversation.
Standardisation, of course, is... it reeks of competence, doesn't it? When you standardise something like that, and then everybody sings from the same hymn sheet, to use the old cliché. Not so much competence really being displayed by our own government this past week. They've come in for a bit of criticism about a new, very attractive deal that they've announced for the great voting public. But it hasn't quite, well, I don't know, it doesn't look as if it's going to quite turn out the way they intended. Tell us about that one, Phil, because I know you've been following it.
Well, we're talking about the Green Homes Grant Scheme, which is all part of the Build government initiative to encourage everyone to start spending money on buildings. This is a home improvement grant scheme, which was announced in outline, last month or June maybe even. But in the past week, we've heard the government put some more detail on how it works and what's going on. And You may remember you and I were a little bit dismissive of complaints by the window companies who were saying it's awful that the thing isn't starting till September because no one's spending money on windows for the 2 months between the announcement of the scheme and the scheme actually going live, which happens in September.
Yeah.
And we said, bah, you're going to get your money soon enough. But more and more people are now sort of saying, well, hang on a minute, what about me? And why this and why that and why not the other? And I don't really like to be churlish when £2 billion has been earmarked for this, for people to get £5,000 a pop to help fund any home improvement that lowers their energy bills, improves the energy efficiency of their home. Which, I mean, the obvious things are loft insulation or wall insulation, any sort of insulation, double glazing, triple glazing, solar panels. They're the sort of the big things.
Yeah.
One would imagine. You also get air source or ground source heat pumps. I don't suspect that would be the bigger demand as there will be for new windows. Windows insulation. And the two complaints that have emerged quite rapidly, one is that certain things are not included in the grant scheme, which vested interests would like to have seen included.
Yeah.
And the other is the fact that it is all tied to the Trustmark scheme, which is a government-endorsed programme to show that you are not a rogue trader, that you're a trusted trader.
It's a sort of pre-qualification thing, isn't it, really?
Yes, sort of.
Almost.
I call it more of a kite mark scheme. And not everyone, you know, thinks that just because you're not in Trustmark doesn't mean to say that you're a rogue trader. There are a lot of people who've got all sorts of other professional badges, which they think are, you know, perfectly fine.
I think one of the things which has upset people also is that this emerged after they'd announced the Green Homes grant. They announced it to great fanfare that everybody can get a slice of this £2 billion and spend it on improving the energy efficiency of their homes. And I imagine that tradesmen all over the UK were rubbing their hands with glee, thinking that this will help their cash flow, only to find out subsequently, almost as an afterthought, in fact, no, it's only those people who are already registered with Trustmark who will benefit. There is another scheme, isn't there? The Microgeneration Certification Scheme, which is a much smaller and a lot less known scheme for people who install solar panels and that kind of thing. But I think the fact that it was announced and then subsequently this caveat appeared that you could only take part if you were a Trustmark registered tradesman has upset quite a few people, and I think quite rightly so.
Well, I didn't know much about Trustmark, to be honest, so I did a bit of homework on it, find out what it's all about. It's a not-for-profit organisation, which is set up in 2005 in conjunction with the government, industry bodies and consumer protection groups. The Federation of Master Builders, for example, was involved, and the Consumer Association, Which Magazine, that lot were involved in setting it all up. And it's got an independent board that oversees it, and it's all very sound in its aims and aspirations. But in the 15 years that it's been going, only 700 companies across the country. Now, 700 may sound a lot, but actually across the whole country, think of how many thousands upon thousands of building firms there are. It's hardly anyone. 700 companies are accredited with the Trustmark. A further 233 with the one you mentioned, the Microgeneration Certification Scheme, which is aligned or can align to Trustmark. Apparently, the Trustmark numbers have gone up by 30% in the past month. In anticipation,
30% of not much.
Sure, but if we go back a couple of months ago, it was only 500 companies. So hardly anyone is in Trustmark, and not everyone wants to be. I had a letter from a chap who runs a Cambridge company called Green Heat Limited, Peter Tom. He says that making Trustmark a prerequisite for suppliers, for the tradespeople to get the grants, it had serious implications for the majority of small heating installers, and especially those qualified heating engineers who are members of a professional or body already, such as, and he mentions, the Chartered Institute of Plumbing and Heating Engineering. I mean, if you're a member of that body, you're clearly a sound outfit, and that should be good enough for the government. he's sort of worried it's going to be another Green Deal Mark II. And he thinks that the idea of having to join additional quality mark schemes, which is a hurdle, which costs money, essentially it's a barrier to trade, he thinks is a step too far. He says, maybe the motive is a plan to create employment with an army of inspectors and administrators, all being paid for by the installer, consumer and the taxpayer. I don't know. There's another point of view. And I mean, Trustmark say that they exist to protect the consumer from cowboys, and this is what it's all about. And the Charter Institute of Building agree with that. They say that they think it's great that the Trustmark requirement is there with this scheme, and they want more companies to register with Trustmark. And I think this is perhaps the government's in the agenda, is that they want to use this as a stick rather than a carrot, or maybe it's a carrot and a stick, to get more companies to sign up to Trustmark and to jump through the hoops.
Do you know what's involved? How many hoops there are to jump through? How quickly you could register?
I don't, but I don't think it's quick enough, because these grants are only available until March. It starts in September, so that's September, October, November, December, January, February, March. It's a seven-month scheme. I beg your pardon, the scheme goes live at the end of September. End of September, so we're talking 6 months for all this to be done. And there's some concern the CIOB has expressed that Trustmark didn't have the bandwidth to deal with the surge in demand for its badge that is implied by this. You know, we'll just have to see what happens here.
I mean, if they say that there's been a 30% increase in registrations with Trustmark since the Green Homes Green Homes grant was announced.
Okay, that's two.
Then clearly it can't be too. Sorry,
you're going to say it can't be too difficult, but that's 200. That's 200 companies in a month. We need tens of thousands to come forward in a month in the next month. Yep. So that's the difference. Whether tens of thousands of companies are going to be able to register in the next month, I doubt it. And I looked at Trustmark's website. Has a section for consumers where you can say, you know, I'm looking for a plumber in my area who's Trustmark registered, and therefore I can trust to do a good job. And so I thought, okay, I'll have an explore, see how many people come up. Where I live near Maidstone, so I put in Maidstone, and it came up 27 plumbers in the Maidstone area available to do it. I thought, no, that's okay, that's many more than I would want to have as a shortlist. But actually, only four of them, on further investigation, are within 10 miles of the town. And most of these 27 are actually in London and just say, yeah, well, you know, we'll work anywhere in the southeast kind of thing. And Birmingham, 21 plumbers, Manchester, 11, London, 87. Although, interestingly, it's that Pimlico Plumbers, the tabloid newspaper's favourite plumber of choice.
Yes.
Pimlico Plumbers are not Trustmark registered or don't appear on the Trustmark database, and then you ask for a plumber in London. I can't imagine Charlie Mullins, although he stepped back, his hand over his son now, I gather, but I can't imagine Charlie Mullins being a great fan of the bureaucracy involved in joining Trustmark. But anyway... No,
he goes by word of mouth, doesn't he? And he's got some pretty high profile customers, so he won't be short of a few jobs.
But I looked at your neck of the woods down in Barnstaple, which is in Devon. I know Barnstaple's in Devon.
Yes, not Somerset. I should have corrected you last week.
I kept accusing you of living in Somerset, but no, you're in...
I'm perilously close to Somerset, but it's still further than I'd want to walk in a day.
I think I'm getting my Barnstaple and Taunton muddled up for some unknown reason.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you don't want to do that.
You've got four plumbers in Barnstaple, apparently, that are Trustmark accredited.
That's right.
You've only got one within 10 miles of you. One of them is in Northampton, which is 160 miles away. So not terribly handy.
Well, I did the same exercise, actually, and I put in, I'm just at random, sort of choosing from the categories on the government website. Funnily enough, energy efficient windows and doors, when I put that into, and my postcode into that category, nothing came up at all in my area. But when I put down underfloor heating, I had 52 hits. The nearest is only 1.5 miles away. It's in the next village. And there are eight more within 10 miles.
Yeah.
So I'm fine. Trouble is, I've already got underfloor heating. So that's not much good to me. But things like heating system insulation, because that was another category. You know, having a well-insulated heating system, absolutely nothing in my area. Yeah, and I think the loft insulation installers, which they must be on every street corner. Well, I could only find one, and that was 194.3 miles away. So, you know.
Clearly.
Yeah, it's strange.
Trustmark is not yet, or at least the Trustmark registered fraternity is not yet up to the job of delivering £2 billion worth of work on 600,000 homes by the end of March.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to see an adjustment here somewhere. This smacks of another brilliant idea which the Prime Minister had within the last couple of weeks, which was the Fix Your Bike grant. Did you take any notice of that? You could get 50 quid to spend on bike repairs. So, you know, take that old sit up and beg bike out of the garden shed, take it down to your bike shop, get him to spruce it up for 50 quid, and everybody's going to be healthy and slim, and we're going to be cycling everywhere. But I when the vouchers went live, I think it was 11 o'clock last Tuesday, it crashed almost immediately because, of course, everybody said, well, I'll have some of that. Everybody's got an old bike in their shed, haven't they? And they give me 50 quid. Yeah, of course, I'll have it fixed. So I think that was another brilliant idea which wasn't properly thought through.
Well, I missed out on that because last month a neighbour who cycles to work every day had their bike was catastrophically damaged. Maybe he should do that to get his bike fixed. But my old bike is barely used. I bought it and moved out of London to what was then regarded the countryside 20 years ago. I thought, I'd better get a bike now, only to discover that actually, when you're surrounded by hills, it's not the easiest way to get around.
That's true.
And so my heavy, clunky bike has been hardly used and sat in the garage gathering dust. But fortunately, it's now got a new home and is being used every day to good purpose.
Good.
But
have you been tempted by the Green Homes grant? I mean, I looked at that and thought, yeah, I could. I mean, I've got, I think, 21 or 23 windows in my house and only five of them are double glazed. And I thought, yeah, maybe this is the time. If they're going to give me £5,000 to put in secondary glazing or something like that, then maybe it's going to be worth me looking at it. So, you know, I'm watching this space, but...
Well, yes.
I don't know, looking at...
I'm very much in the same frame of mind. I think my house is probably a similar vintage, maybe not quite as old as yours. Yes, with all single glazing. I don't want to go to the wretched plastic or aluminium. In fact, I don't think I'm allowed to because I'm in a conservation area or something of that similar ilk. So I'd have to get like-for-like wooden double glazing, which is expensive, but £5,000 would go a long way to soften the blow. So I'm certainly going to explore it, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Let's hope they do sort it out then.
Well, I think what I'll do is I'll find my local friendly local window company who I've used before for things and see if I can't persuade
him to sign up to Trustmark.
Persuade him to sign up to Trustmark and say there's money in it for you, for me at least, if you do it.
Quite.
But the other thing about the Trustmark scheme, it does hark back, and we talked several weeks ago about moves afoot within the industry with a degree of political support for a builder's licence scheme.
Yes.
Which, in a sense, this whole Trustmark thing is the foundations of. Now, it may well be, now whether this is just serendipity or hidden agenda, I'm not sure, but if the Green Homes grant scheme does get thousands upon thousands of tradespeople to register, get credited with Trustmark, now whether we can simply flip that and say, right, you've got a builder's licence, or it removes the whole necessity for a builder's licence because Trustmark is it, enough said. I don't know. Now, I've mentioned before, I'm...
That sounds a bit too subtle to me. I don't think they've... I mean,
joined up thinking.
About
you don't believe
agenda
in it.
I don't think they could do that. No, they might. They might have a light bulb moment, rather like you, and think, oh, maybe we could use this to leverage a builder's licence scheme. I mean, if enough people come forward, then they might think, yes, obviously it's clearly going to work. But I don't suppose that they've thought it through to that extent. If anything, you know, the recent shenanigans are anything to go by, I don't think they're really that together, to be perfectly honest.
Well, if people think Trustmark is a hassle and a hurdle and an unnecessary burden when they've already got professional accreditation through some other organisations, wait till you see whatever dog's dinner builder's licence turns out to be.
And that is a very serious point, isn't it? I mean, if you are a member of a recognised trade body, especially if you have to be vetted and jump through various different hoops in order to be a member of this organisation, whatever it might be, and whatever your specific trade body might be, it is a bit of a slap in the face to be told that this isn't going to be recognised by the government. Even, you know, you wear your badge proudly, you put it on your letterhead, all the rest of it, and then to be told by Boris Johnson that, no, you've got to have the trust mark because we don't recognise anything else. I think membership of a professional trade organisation should count for something, after all.
Well, I don't know. I said at the outset, I don't know enough about Trustmark, the registration, accreditation process, and exactly what hoops to jump through, but it seems to me that it wouldn't be beyond the wit of man to work out that the Chartered Institute of Plumbing and Heating and Engineering, if Trustmark looked at their requirements and said, yep, good enough for us, mutual recognition, if you are a member of that institute or if you're a member of Scheme X or Scheme Y, we acknowledge and recognise that as perfectly upstanding, you automatically get a free Trustmark kite mark with membership of that institution. And that would seem to be the way forward, if it isn't already. Maybe it is already.
One thing that this this alerted me to, which I'd never encountered this organisation before, was that if you're thinking of taking advantage of this Green Homes grant, you can go to an organisation called the Simple Energy Advice Service, who will advise you on what might be a suitable project for you. And I'd never heard of them before, have you?
No, I haven't. And I would...
Simple Energy Advice.
I would love a independent... there are plenty of people who can do that, I'm sure. But someone like that to come around to my drafty, leaky house and say, well, you've got insulation, but the wrong type, and you've only got it up there and not down there. And, you know, this is how you could, this is what you should be doing, how you can do this, that and the other. Because we all feel that whenever any tradesperson comes into our house and starts sucking in air through their teeth, they're selling us something.
Yes.
So some independent expert advice like that would be, I think we could all appreciate.
Yeah, I think that would be good as well.
I mentioned earlier about some of the vested interests who are unhappy about not being included. And the particular one is, the two separate organisations that sound to me like they're closely aligned, the Heating and Hot Water Industry Council and the Hot Water Association.
Never heard of them.
The Hot Water Association, do you know them? I don't know these people.
Never heard of them, no.
But they exist. And they both use the same phrase, it's a missed opportunity, because you're not allowed or you won't get a grant for new hot water cylinders, heating controls and radiators. The chap from the Hot Water Association says it makes absolutely no sense that a hot water cylinder isn't on the list of approved measures. Why isn't the government recognising the importance of hot water storage? Seems like a fair point.
But yes, absolutely.
You can see, I'm sure there are other energy improvement efficiency related suppliers and contractors who are thinking, well, we should be on this too.
Well, we'll just have to wait and see, I suppose, because it goes live in September, doesn't it? So there might be another rush, just as there was for the Fix Your Bike scheme, and everything crashes and it's just quietly forgotten.
I think there needs to be. And what I would say to anyone listening who's interested in all of this, David and I freely admit that while we're very interested in this subject, we don't actually know what we're talking about to a huge extent. So if you want the absolute gospel on how the scheme works, who's involved, who can get the money, who can give you the money, how to get the money, etc., do Google it, gov.uk, or go to Trustmark, have a look at what that's all about, trustmark.org.uk, find out what that's all about and how you can get accredited there. That's the place to get the answers from. Don't rely on our witcherings.
So shall we move on to another very different topic, Phil? Talking about bridge construction.
Yes, well, there's the news this week that the new bridge in Genoa opened this week with much fanfare and a degree of solemnity.
Genoa being a city in northern Italy.
Exactly that.
People
may remember in August 2018, just 2 years ago, the Morandi Bridge, this big elevated viaduct across the that connects the port to the rest of the city, I think, collapsed tragically, killing 43 people. It emerged that it had been lack of maintenance for years, and it wasn't exactly After the effect, it wasn't a surprise. Of course, at the time, it was a surprise, but it was a bit of a state, and it collapsed.
Yeah,
it was a horrible incident.
And 43 people were killed, weren't they?
Exactly.
And there was footage of the collapse. It was all pretty shocking.
Yeah, it was dramatic and horrible. But it's quite extraordinary, it seems to me, that here we are, 3rd of August 2020, when all the rubble and debris has been cleared away, and a new bridge, a 1 kilometre structure on 18 piers of 45 metre height, has been built and finished and open. In the construction took just 15 months.
Incredible,
15
isn't it?
Months to build a 1 kilometre bridge is an extraordinary effort. Credit to those involved, who are, it's a company called We Build, which is what until recently was Cellini and Pagillo, but Cellini and Pagillo merged with Astaldi at the beginning of the year, end of last year, and rebranded as We Build.
I think that's a shame. I like that name.
Well,
Cellini and Pagillo.
I suppose
it trips off the tongue.
But if you're trying not to be international in a global marketplace, We Build is suitably.
Yes, that's true.
What's the product that does what it says on the tin? It's one of those, isn't it?
Well, We Build is. I don't know.
The other contractor, its joint venture contractor, its partner, we should mention, also says Fincantieri. Fincantieri, I beg your pardon. And it's designed by Renzo Piano, the famous architect, designed it, who apparently did it for free.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I just think that it's fabulous. It shows what can be done. The Italian Prime Minister, Giuseppe Conte, I noticed in the newspapers, was quoted saying it's the result of Italian genius. Well, we have no doubt about Italian engineering genius, right back to the original Italian genius engineering, Da Vinci himself. But Italian engineering is, we all know, fabulous, particularly if you're into your motorsports in any sense. But he also highlights the virtuous collaboration between politics, local administration, business and work, which is perhaps not something we associate with the Italian stereotype so much. So,
well, in one sort of manifestation, I suppose we do. There's, you know, we're talking about close collaboration between politics and business, and you know, it's not the right sort of.
Okay, let's speak a thing. We're both getting in dangerous waters here with us.
Well, I think this is one of the interesting things about this. Was I absolutely agree with you. It was a fantastic achievement, and everybody involved is to be applauded, because it was a wonderful example of collaboration and team working. Apparently the contractors worked literally round the clock nearly every day except for Christmas and one or two really bad weather days. So they really pulled out all the stops and built this wonderful bridge. And it contrasts quite starkly with the history of the original Morandi Bridge, which again was lauded for its engineering. I thought it was actually quite an unattractive bridge. It was a cable-stayed bridge, but the cables
that's
were encased
right,
with concrete. And I never quite understood that. And it was actually the fact that the cables were encased by concrete, which basically,
so you couldn't see what
moisture.
Was going on.
You couldn't see what was going on. It, you know, rebar tends to rot, and the concrete spores, all the rest of it. It was the same with these cables. They weren't properly maintained. Moisture got in. There was corrosion, which remained undetected for a long time until, I think, when the bridge actually collapsed. It was in the middle of a storm, I think, which was clearly the final straw, and the weakened bridge basically just gave up the ghost. The company that was supposed to be maintaining the bridge, I think it was called Autostrada, which...
Autostrada do an awful lot of road maintenance.
Motorway. It was an organiser. It was a government-owned organisation, which I believe was responsible for maintenance of the Italian motorway network. It was privatised and it was sold to Benetton, the fashion house. We don't really know what went on, but there was a lot of talk about the fact that they weren't really interested in Autostrada. It was just something which, why they bought it, I don't know. But anyway, there were allegations of incompetence and corruption, and the maintenance of the bridge was neglected, with the tragic results 2 years ago. In a way, it's a depressingly familiar story. Italy, as we know, has had problems with corruption and organised crime in the past. Yeah, I know modern Italy has done an awful lot to combat that, but there are so many huge infrastructure projects which have foundered or failed or simply not got off the ground simply because of the sheer graft and the corruption which goes on. And in a way, the Morandi Bridge seemed, you know, when it collapsed, you think, oh no, here we go again. It's the same old story. Well, the new bridge, Renzo Piano's bridge, the design, construction, delivery of that couldn't be more different. I mean, it was just brilliantly done. There was clearly very tight controls. If there was any corruption there, it was clearly on a negligible scale. Yeah, I think that it was a really impressive feat, not just from the engineering point of view, but from the project management, conception, design, the rest of it, all of it, in fact, I think was very, very good.
I agree. And I think there are parallels, interesting parallels with the construction of the new Genoa San Giorgio Bridge, as the new bridge is called, St George. The parallels with that and our own NHS Nightingale hospitals that we've talked about being built, and the ones in Scotland and Northern Ireland and Wales as well, which show that when something absolutely has to be done, the construction industry can, with political will, pull together and get remarkable things done. Now, I'm not suggesting that I think the construction of San Giorgio Bridge is a much greater technical achievement than converting the NEC Birmingham into hospital wards. But logistically, the same sense of just get it done, folks. Yes. Don't bring me problems, bring me solutions mentality.
Yeah.
Work round the clock was demonstrated there. So I think...
Well,
there's
nothing quite like a team ethos, is there? I know that this was...
Or an emergency, or a crisis.
Or emergency, yes. When everybody realises they are all in the same boat and they have to pull together. And I know that for years, people have been trying to inculcate that into the industry because, of course, the way the industry has operated historically is in a far more fragmented way. Teamwork doesn't always come naturally to the construction industry. People are always watching their back and they've got their own interests to think about. But certainly when everybody does buy in, amazing things can happen. And I think this was a really good example of that.
I did a little bit of looking back at some recent British bridge building projects to see whether we could build a 1 kilometre structure in 15 months. And the two examples I quickly looked to that came to my mind, there's the Mersey Gateway, the bridge between Runcorn and Widnes, which construction started May 2014. It opened in October 2017. 3.5 years to build that, on time, under budget.
Not bad.
It's actually a little bit. I mean, it's a 1 kilometre, 1,000 metre cable stay span. The whole thing with roads as well is 2.2 kilometres. So there's more involved. You've got a bit, you know, the connecting roads at either end.
Mm-hmm.
But the 3.5 years for that versus, what are we saying, 15 months for the Genoa Bridge.
Yeah.
I think that's 1-0 to Italy there. And then the Queensferry Crossing, which ended up being a bit of a trauma for all consoled. Construction started in September 2011, and it didn't open until August 2017. That's 6 years of construction for the new fourth bridge.
Yes.
Which is a bigger project than the Genoa one, 2.7 kilometre bridge and 4 kilometres of link roads. So that's certainly two or three times the project, but more than two or three times the construction period.
Mm.
Now, it's slightly trite comparing these things, pretending we're comparing like with like when there are different things going on. But I do think that had, for example, God forbid, a big bridge such as happened in Genoa were to collapse in the UK and a key artery depended on it, I would like to think that we could get it rebuilt in 15 months too.
I think, I mean, the new Genoa Bridge, looks like a simpler structure. I mean, I don't really know much about the structure. I'm simply looking at a picture of it. I mean, the original bridge was a cable-stayed bridge with several spans. This one looks a lot more straightforward. As you said, there are 18 concrete piers and they're spaced fairly closely together. But there's basically no superstructure above the deck, is there? It's an elevated road. I mean, it looks very elegant, I have to say that. Presumably it was an easier bridge to build than something like the Queen's Ferry Bridge, which after all is a very complex structure.
Yes, and you're not putting the piers in the water, which makes it immediately easy. This goes across sort of railway lands and warehousing land, sort of industrial land, it seems to me, looking at the pictures. It is, as you say, technically a more straightforward site to work on.
I think it looks nicer than the old one.
I'm not keen on cable stay bridges, I've got to say. On the whole, I think cable stay bridges, compared to suspension bridges, which always seem to look elegant and swishy and beautiful, cable stay bridges just don't cut it for me.
Well, we need a bridge expert to tell us why so many bridges now are cable stay bridges. You don't see a suspension bridge anymore, do you? Cable stay bridges seem to be that if you're going to build a big bridge across a strait of something, then you go for cable stayed.
I think they must be cheaper and more efficient, is my guess, but you're right. Let's get a bridges expert on to explain us why.
Yeah, be interesting.
Well, David, have we finished for this week? I think that's all we've planning on talking about.
Well, yes, I think so, at the risk of just wittering on about anything that crops into our minds, I think it's probably a good idea to stop while we still might be worth listening to.
Always best. So we will be back again next week, happy to say. That will be the Wednesday, the 12th of August. We'll speaking here again. Yep. Reminder to everyone that you can subscribe to the podcast. If you've just come across us by accident, you can subscribe to the podcast at all the usual places. Reconstruction is what we go by. You can read more about the topics that we've been talking about at theconstructionindex.co.uk, the daily news service of the UK construction industry. And you can contact us at podcast@theconstructionindex.co.uk. Once again, thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye, David.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Reconstruction, the podcast from the Construction Index. To keep up to date with the latest construction news and headlines, please visit theconstructionindex.co.uk and sign up for our free daily email news briefing. We're currently offering a massive 80% discount on subscriptions to the Construction Index magazine. Order yours online today for only £1 per issue. Visit theconstructionindex.co.uk/magazine to subscribe.